Yes, I bet you don't know too many unemployed toolmakers at the moment or robot programmers.
Oh, no, not at all. If they're out there and they have a breath, they're probably working someplace.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Robot Industry Podcast. Thank you for subscribing. We are taking the rig on the road this summer. My wife and business partner, Janet, and our dog, Bree, we're hitting Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island. It's been a great week or so, and so I'm looking forward to the next part of our vacation. I'm going to re-release one of the most important podcasts that I've recorded on the Robot Industry Podcast, and I hope it motivates and inspires you. Dave Goodenough and I met in Orlando at an A3 event. I was waiting for a cab at the airport, and he kindly offered me a ride, and I took that ride, and we've been friends ever since. I also wanted to mention to you that I am starting a second podcast. It's called the Automation Matters Podcast. It's about the front end of the business. It's about sales, business development, marketing, and all things that happen at the front of an automation robot integrator's business. Enjoy the podcast. So why is talent attraction so important to you? And maybe like you say, even a passion?
For me, the passion is this business has been very, very good for me. And I like to pass on my talent, that I like to teach other people what this passion, what this business, getting in engineering or getting into the skilled trades or whatever it is. I've been through all of them. So I'd like to pass on that. There's a passion in me that loves this business. I like seeing the talent. If we don't have the talent in this trade, it's all going to die. And it stems into a lot of products that we all have in our everyday lives. I mean, automation makes a lot of stuff. And with the skills gaps trading happening, you know, there was a report I read that by the time of 2025, there's going to be 2.5 million jobs of skilled trades unfilled. And that's huge. And I taking it on my own personal responsibility to try to help that stat go down is where I'm at. So,
well, you know, and I think that's a really good thing for us to think about too, is because the skills gap, like the automation and robotics industry, is not immune to this skills gap, right?
Right, right. I mean, you know, even what we do, there's still people in the manufacturing facilities that have to know what we know just to keep the machines running, you know, to keep the products going out the door, to do all the stuff that in our everyday lives are basically relied on all this stuff. So it's huge. And it's trying to have people understand what that means, you know, just trying to get an education part of how do we track it? Cause you know, when I was in my apprenticeship, I had 14 people in my apprenticeship. We had a pre-apprenticeship class. We had 14 people. It's hard to get two or three now. And it's kind of scary in a way. So,
well, yes. And I think from earlier conversations in the industry, you know, we're seeing a lot less engineers in the on the plant floor. Would you agree with that statement?
Yes, totally agree. I agree. Everybody's in the office. They're at their points. They make some small decisions on the stuff on the shop floor. Guys on the shop floor come in and say, "Hey, I need this help." They're then dragged out. But at the same time, they're responsible for the next product, the next stuff, the next thing. So, and then they're shorthanded too. So it just needs to be, we need to get the guys on the floor and the skilled trades in all of them. I mean, it goes anywhere from plumbing to toolmaker to electrician to you name it. They're all lacking, and they all give you a good way to make a living in your life. I mean, it is a great way to make a living.
Yes, I bet you don't know too many unemployed toolmakers at the moment or robot programmers.
Oh, no. Not at all. If they're out there and they have a breath, they're probably working someplace. So it's definitely a needed skill in every aspect. I mean, a machinist, you know, every place is a machining, and I don't see that ever going away. You're going to be a lot of 3D printing and 3D, all that stuff coming up, but that's still a technology that needs to be, that has a skill that needs to be followed. You know, there's new technology coming up that the skills are still going to need to be there. They just need to be learned differently.
Yeah, and I think you're right. The what's really interesting about the industry right now is that there are those things like 3D printing or software for 3D printing. So there's a lot of tech in tech.
Yes.
At the moment.
Yes, very, very much so.
So yeah. You and I mentioned, or you and I talked about this, about you traveling to one of your customers, and you don't have to say who the customer is, but you saw firsthand recently the big challenges that manufacturers have. And you were talking about some of the billboards in a town you were visiting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, I went to a facility, and as I was driving up to the place, into the town, there was big billboards on the side that said, "This customer is wanting to hire. We're paying $18 to $19 an hour. We have full benefits." I mean, it was a big old billboard. There was even yard signs in places throughout the whole place as you went through. It was like a political yard sign for job fair or job, you know, we need your help. And so I got into the facility, and I talked to the person I was meeting at that time, and I go, "Man, there's a lot of job." "Oh yeah, we're about 80 to 90 people short. We actually have 4 assembly lines that we can only staff for 3 right now." So what they're doing is they're getting automation. They're you know, and he says, "The other thing we have problems with is keeping them running. I mean, you know, trying to get a tech in here to be able to touch up a point on a robot, or be able to troubleshoot an electrical problem because a prox went bad, or whatever it is. I mean, there's so many things that even outside of our business, there's still stuff out there that has to be covered. And they even have apprentices. They even have all this stuff that we are trying to do to bring on the skilled trades on top of the manufacturing people that they need just for the everyday day-to-day operation on the assembly line." So it was quite an eye-opener. And it's not the only place that I've been to in the last over a year. I mean, it's really been over a year that a shortage of people have been a driving factor for us in the automation field. So
it's truly affecting manufacturing output as well then.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It really is. And what they're doing is basically, you know, with the COVID stuff, they're looking at now is how can I spread out people to 6 feet, keep the social distancing. Well, sometimes you don't have the room on the existing assembly line, so you throw a cobot in there or whatever you can do to help that part of this with the new world we live in right now. So
you're seeing some people putting in, say, collaborative robots, just get over the hump a little bit, but also maybe to attract. Do you think automation is attracting the younger workers too? People want to work in automated plants, I think.
I think so. I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to also have a, because you also have to have a marketing thing, right? I mean, there's a local company that wants to be the best that I have a customer, that they want to be the best at what they do, but they want to have the cool automation thing so they can start attracting people to come to their facility. And he's the owner of the company has actually told me that this is why I'm automating. Whatever it costs, I want to do this just because this is the wave of the future. This is what's going to have to happen. To do that, you need skilled trades. You need the skilled people to do this thing. So you have to start someplace. And we've had some discussions, you and I, about how do we get to that point and how do we go to there? And, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. I'm part of a couple, and it's just how do we get to there, right?
So let's talk about that. We did talk about like going into the colleges and going to the universities and going into the high schools, but we also talked about the grade schools. So where's some of the challenges, or where are some of the problems that we have to address?
There's a stigma about manufacturing, right? And it's basically thought of as dirty. And a lot of the parents these days remember their grandpa coming home all messy and messed up. And it's not like that anymore. There are a few places like that, but for the most part, everybody's factory automation is really cleaning up a lot of stuff. All the dirty jobs are like handling lead plates or something like that. You know, something that's just hazardous are now being taken over by automation, where you're getting the people out of it, which are going into the cleaner areas and that type of stuff. So I think it's education at a level of trying to make people understand that it's not the old fashioned manufacturing. There's new stuff coming out every day. Even our business, you know, it's clean. It's high tech. It's something new all the time. You're always dealing with that. You're creating something in, you know, in the field we are, you know, we're creating something every day. You know, everything's new. It's a prototype machine we build every day. Like most custom manufacturing, you know, custom automation houses, we're building a one of kind machine. If you're lucky, you get to build a second one again. Just you have a better frame of what you're doing at that point. But a lot of the machines we do are just prototypes. So trying to educate, I think, Jim, the parents, the educators, even at the high school and grade school level, of trying to get them to understand, get them in on tours, get them into your place on showing what we do. I do that all the time. I try to get teachers and guidance counselors, especially, you know, because there's kids that like to go to school, they were gonna, that are meant to go to college, but there's other ones that are just hands-on learning. This is the this is the type of stuff they need to be getting into. They can get into learning how to do this stuff and how to put a machine together, how to wire a machine, how to debug a machine, how to touch up points on a robot, how to program the robot to get to that point. So it's to me, it's how do we get to the, my passion lately has been, how do I get to the parent? How do I get the parent to say, really, look at your, there's a trade here for your son or daughter. There's something here that can make you just make them have a very exciting and rewarding life. Be a good pillar in a community. Be all the stuff that you want them to be on this path of this travel. You know, there's both paths. There's the engineering, there's schooling, there's college, there's all this stuff, but there's also this other path that it seems like it got pushed to the background a little bit. And I think we need to bring on the kids that may not have that classroom ability and get them another avenue. That's what I've been passionate about.
And it's the guidance counselors, and it's like you say, it's the parents, it's the school principals, to all be aware of what's happening in manufacturing. And there's so much like machine vision and, like you say, lots of programming and lots of hands-on opportunities. But one of the exciting things I think about the industrial automation industry is that you're always working on the next gen thing. Maybe it's the next generation medical device, and maybe it's a cure for COVID, or maybe it's the next automobile platform. So it's very, very exciting as well.
Right. No, I very, very true. I mean, and right now what we're seeing a lot of is, which you never really saw too much of in the past, at least where I've worked, is the consumer product stuff, bathroom tubs, just making bathroom tubs. We got a job right now that we're starting to put in mobile robots and stacking boxes to an order, you know, because of that, because they have a person right now putting a 105-pound box on top of their head, carrying it over to a stack and putting it up onto a thing. That's the type of stuff that we're trying to help with. That's the next gen that you talked about. There's always something new. And we got machines out here right now for the medical stuff, you know, that they're in a hurry to get a machine built to make at-home testers for COVID. You know, it's all this stuff that you're always on that bleeding edge. And there's so much technology to make that. Robots, the 3D vision stuff, all this stuff, the laser line generator, laser welding. There's a whole lot of new technology out there that there's shortages of people to understand it and make it work.
One of the things that you and I talked about was your involvement with FIRST Robotics. Can you give me a little bit of a feel, the people out there listening, how you got involved and what it's meant to you and to your company?
So FIRST Robotics is, if anybody doesn't really know about it, is a competition for high school kids. Now, it actually starts back in the whole FIRST thing. It actually starts in the grade school, kindergarten, first, you know, elementary stuff with like FIRST Lego leagues and stuff like that. And they basically give you a challenge, and you basically have so much time to create a robot to do this challenge. Everybody in the whole world, there's like over 5,000 teams in the whole world. Everybody at January 1, first Saturday in January, gets together. We all get this big old web blast from FIRST Robotics Central of, here's the task, this is what we're going to do. And they say, go. And you're basically got a kid, you got kids, you have mentors, you have kids from high schools, and you're basically are given like 6 to 8 weeks to build this robot. Then you have 2.5 minutes of a team driving. There's also the part of this thing that I like the best is you're always 3-on-3. There's 3 teams on a blue alliance and 3 teams on a red alliance. They're basically going at each other, but the 3 teams on this one team may be against each other on the next side. So you're always trying, they promote this, what they call cooperation. And you're trying to help that team. If they're having trouble, you might have your engine, your controls guy over there trying to help them debug a problem just to get them on the field for you to be working on that. But they might beat you in the next one. It doesn't matter. It's all about this cooperation stuff. And in this thing here for us, it has every aspect of our field. We have upfront mechanical engineering, we have electrical, we have programming, we have mechanical build, we got machining. We also have marketing and sales in this thing. We have marketing and sales teams on this thing. So where they're out there going, and it really is a small version of what custom automation does. It right. Really is. You know, you're trying out there and you're trying to collect money to get the sales team and marketing team are marketing us. They're trying to go out to companies, getting money to basically send this team to hopefully worlds, right? I mean,
yep.
That's the goal. So the nice thing about it for me is I've been a mentor on this team for 11 years. And our team, I'll just give you a little history of our team, if you don't, if that's okay.
No, this is what we want.
And a little history is we started with one school. It's a small school. And a lot of these schools are huge and they got lots of big budgets. I mean, there's schools out there that got $100,000 budgets every year. And ours is about $45,000-$50,000 every year we have to come up with to make this. So we started out with one school. We got one or two kids. You know, these are talking, you know, 200 kids in the high school type stuff. And we brought on another team the next year, another school the next year. We've actually made a team out of five different schools, five different very small schools, a couple parochial schools, you name it. But we've made this team. We got up to 45, 50 kids on our team right now. So it's a really nice, solid team. What's nice about that whole thing is we get everybody together at the first, like in December, coming up here will be, well, not so much this year, but and we bring these kids together and we have a meeting. And this is what we're going to do. We're explaining it all. All the old kids are actually telling the younger new kids coming up, this is what's going to happen. And you see this thing of they all gather in their schools throughout this meeting. Here's the kids from this school. Here's the kids from this school. Here's the kids from this school. By the time we're done, there's no school. There's no school affiliation. A couple of these schools are actually they're rivalries in the sports. They're not here. And there's a big parade, just to give you an example of what happened. There's sometime we had a big parade through our town and the schools went through their bands. A lot of these kids are on band and all that stuff. And at the end of the parade, they all get together. And you know, you got all these band uniforms in one little clump. Other people that are out on the first robotics end are going up to them in the school later saying, "Hey, why were you talking with that guy from blah blah blah?" Because he's a teammate of mine. That's what he said. You know, he says, "This is not about this, this, and this. It's about us as making a robot and a task that goes on." Now, we have schedules. We have all that stuff. But with all this stuff here, we've actually taken this to the next level. It's like, for me personally, getting this, I get to go in and help these kids understand what the technology is, how to do some engineering on stress analysis of what that torque means to the gear and all that stuff that has to happen to make a decent robot go to the task, you know. So it's nice to see this. The one thing that I see is work ethic, which is huge. I mean, there's kids that you get all kinds. There's all types of levels in this whole thing, and you get to see who's got natural ability, who's got all this stuff. So, and at Edgewater, we've actually hired 8 kids out of this program of ours. You know,
you've hired 8 kids?
Yes. Yeah. Over the last 11 years, we've actually hired 8 kids out of this program.
Wow. That's exciting.
We got a couple into a mechanical apprenticeship. We got one that went through the electrical apprenticeship. We got one right now on our machining apprenticeship. And we actually hired 2 that went to college, got their degree in mechanical engineering. They came back and we hired them. So it's been both gamuts. We pull them right out of it. We've actually come up here. We also got one kid that just came right out of high school, went into what we created a mechanical engineering apprenticeship, and he's working through that. So it's been very good for us. It's a good way to pre-screen. How do you want to say that? at the end of the day, I'm doing pre-screening of what this person's like and what's their work ethic. Do they really want to learn, or are they, you know, there's other reasons, but that's the biggest thing.
Well, you certainly would know them very well, so you'd be able to vouch for their, especially as students. So that's very, very exciting. You told me a story about one of your students who's a bit quiet, maybe a bit introverted.
Yeah. Well, this is an interesting story. So I'm just going to use his name, Vince. Vince came into one of our meetings. He was a freshman at one of the parochial schools, came in, and he didn't even really hang out with his school. He was kind of this kid in the background that was just kind of by himself, you know? And when we go through this, we always have kids introduce themselves, what school they're from, and that type of stuff. His dad was there. He actually had to push him to get there, right? He gets into it. He starts getting into it. The kid is a natural machinist. He goes to a parochial school. He's never had machining done in his life. He's rebuilt cars with his dad. He knows how to do, he works with his hands. He understands how to do this and he figures it all out. He just got done painting his truck in our paint booth. He did it. He just figured out how to do it and he did it. But the kid was quiet. by the time the 4 years were done, he became our best machinist in the team. You could tell that he was there. We actually hired him on a co-op basis after school work his junior year to come in and work at Edgewater because he just has this ability to do that. But it was one thing that I saw is like he just knew that the feel of the cutter against the metal and how not to force it and all the stuff that was there. But by the time he was done, he actually became the part of the team. He was now the leader of the mechanical machining a part of our team. He was then the leader of that thing. He was directing people what to do. He was teaching people what to do. And he was giving me a hard time like you wouldn't believe. It was fun to watch him grow up through this whole thing. Now he's on our floor right now. He's into his second year of his machine apprenticeship. And I'll be honest with you, he's probably our second best machinist out on the floor. We got eight machinists out on the floor right now. So,
well, that's a really good story. Can you tell me a little bit about your MAGA, the MAGA group, that's the Manufacturers Awareness Group in your area?
Sure. So myself and a couple other people, one's a superintendent of a local high school, we kind of got together and we started this group called MAGA, MAGA Manufacturing Education Awareness Group. It was a brainstorm I had from it wasn't my idea. I was on an advisory committee at a local high school. And we started talking about how can we get parents involved? How can we get them to understand this thing? It's one thing to have manufacturing days and have a bunch of kids come through your facility. But until you get to them parents, because they're going to go home, that was cool. You're going to college, you know, that type of stuff. And that's not where the only way you want to be. You want to try to get that. So we're trying to get to the education of the guidance counselors, the principals, and then to the parents. How do we do that? So what we did is the superintendent was he was on board with this thing. He helped us create this group and he got the local education people involved in this thing. So we set up so what we did is we had tours of local manufacturing facilities and we basically the superintendents of all the schools kind of strong armed their guidance counselors to go. After they were done, they were glad they went. We all met at the local college. We had some really nice tour buses that we actually had all these guidance counselors, whoever in the education part come in and we put them on buses and we went to two or three different type of manufacturing facilities, our place, another facility like us, and then the manufacturing side after us. So we tried to get, it wasn't just an Edgewater thing or just where I work thing. It was a whole countywide thing is what we were trying to go for. So we had these teachers, we went in, we gave them all tours, we had little set downs at every place afterwards, and we had these little brainstorming sessions. And I was on the tour bus with one of these groups, and we went into this one place, they made molds is what they did. And we sat in their room, and these teachers and guidance counselors saying, this is so cool. So, and I go, what can we do? Well, we can do this. The brainstorming of what they could do to help us then at that point was just flowing. Anyway, we all boarded horses. We went back to the local college to where we had a big, nice meal. So we had sat down, we had some presentations of some other smaller places that didn't really like an electrical warehouse. They just put on a presentation for these people on the board. And then we had some local leaders just kind of tell about what we're leading, what we're looking for, what kind of benefits. We then presented, okay, these are the types of jobs and, you know, I can get into an apprenticeship. We can do internships. We can do, a lot of these places do already do this. They do internships, apprenticeships, job shadowing. You know, we do job shadowing here, but then we sat there and we said, okay. And at the end of this thing, we had a local guy that was a really good speaker. He was a keynote. So he basically challenged all these people out on the floor, all these educators. All right, in 3 months, we need a list of people, of kids. You're going to go back. You're going to find these kids that are not so good in school or they just struggle or whatever, you know, and you ask them, what do you think about this? And so what we ended up doing is we ended up setting up a Google sign up thing and everybody could go on. They could sign up kids to actually be part of this. We then sent out mailers to parents. We actually sent out flyers. We did some online radio broadcasting, basically saying this is an event coming up here in the spring, the education in the fall. And so we got a list of kids. Well, then at that point, we did the second thing to where we did the same thing. We put them on a vice bus. We fed them well. we to be honest with you, to hopefully gather some more input, we did a giveaway. We were trying to do a giveaway, you know, to try to get the parents to, hey, I can go get a free meal and maybe get a chance at a big screen TV or whatever it is. So it went over very well. I mean, there was a couple kids I know that have been hired in by other people. The parents then came up to us later and said, wow, what an amazing event. I didn't know anything about any of this out there. So it was a good way to get them started and involved. So that's been the premise of where we're starting. Now with COVID, it's been kind of been put on hold this year. But that's kind of the premise of where we're trying to go. And it's not just a one company thing. It's really, truly a countywide thing. And it's a way for us to just really try, Jim, to try to get a hold of them parents. It's all that really was, is how do we get a hold of them parents and how do we get to that point?
And you're working with your competitors, right? Which is a
thing. Yes. Yeah. We actually, one of the competitors down the road was part of one of the speakers, and they were one of the tour sites. We were the other tour sites. And it once the egos go away, it's perfect. But there is, you know, and you just gotta, I try to explain this. I'm not part of Edgewater at this time, guys. I'm part of trying to help a young person get a step ahead in life is what that's my goal, is really where I want to go.
So you also do a mentorship at Edgewater as well, and you've got internships and apprenticeships. What other types of programs are you doing, or is that pretty much it?
That's pretty much it. And then the outside stuff is where I do this. And then I always try to get in with some advisory committees and some local schools and stuff and try to help personally. That's what I do. But Edgewater has all the apprenticeships. We actually have four different apprenticeships: mechanical, electrical, we have a design apprenticeship, and machining apprenticeship. So we have four fields that we like to try as field as part of the apprenticeship. We actually have local high schools that send their kids for during school time to us to actually help do a job shadow. They get to follow, and they do it for a week, not just a day. It's more of a week. So you come in from 8 to 9 and you're watching this thing here. So, and you move them around at that point to give them the electrical, the mechanical, you try to move them around to that stuff. So, and then the internships, everybody pretty much has, we get internships out of college, interns out of college and that type of thing. And that's kind of where we kind of hold it at that point.
Yep. So. Oh, that's great. I think it's,
sorry, one more, we get tons of tours. I mean, if somebody wants to give a tour for a young class or something, you know, we've had, you know, middle schoolers and elementary kids coming in, and you set it up, you try to have a robot moving in and give them something just to get them excited and geeked about it. So
I think touring is so important. I know when I was in the industry, I gave hundreds and hundreds of tours of our facilities. And it is something to help get them all excited, and teachers love it. And sometimes you have to, as a manufacturer, sometimes you have to pay for the bus or figure out how to get them in, like you've done with your competitions. So if someone's out there listening, Dave, and they want to get involved with FIRST Robotics or maybe set up a little consortium like you've done, what are some of the things that they can do?
So FIRST Robotics actually has a very nice website called firstinspires.org. And you can actually sign up to be a mentor right online, and they will get you in touch with a local team. Or if you want to get a hold of one of your high schools and the tech guy, the guy in the machine shop or the guy in the engineering department in the high school, and say, hey, I'd like to help you. That's kind of what I did. Myself and another guy, the teacher at Coloma High School, was basically, we just said, we're going to start this. And we started it together. We started the team. He did all the stuff I don't like to do, which is the paperwork, but paperwork. More of an engineer, right? So I like the hands-on, touchy-feely, just because of my background. But he was that guy. I was the technical guy. Both of us together, we're bringing the team together. That's how we grew that team. But it was me and him getting together. So I would recommend going out, talk to one of the teachers, talk to the guidance counselor, whatever, find somebody in that school that you'd say, hey, I'd like to help you do this and that. Now, with that being said, from January to April, my wife doesn't see me much. it's a big investment, but to me, it's worth it. I like seeing the kids. I like seeing that sparkle in the eye when they get the aha moment of, man, this is cool. I get this. You know, that's fun. That's really fun. And then
Dave, this has been, Very exciting and a lot of fun, this conversation. How can people get in touch with you if they'd like to learn a little bit more?
So you can get a hold of me at eddave.goodenough, G-O-O-D-E-N-O-U-G-H, at edgewaterautomation, all one word, .com. You can also get a hold of me through LinkedIn, on my LinkedIn page. And thank you, Jeff. That's a couple ways you can get a hold of me.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you for your time today. I'd like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. They're the leading trade association in the world for robotics, vision and imaging, motion control and motors, and the artificial intelligence technologies. Visit automate.org to learn more. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank our team, Chris Gray for music, Jeffrey Bremner for audio production, and my business partner, Janet.